flights are canceled due to volcano.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. We begin this morning in the skies over the UK, where hundreds of airline flights have been disrupted because of a huge cloud of ash from a volcanic eruption in Iceland. We bring in Marketplace's Stephen Beard, live from London. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Bill.
What's the latest here?
Absolutely massive disruption to air travel. Scotland was hit first. The three major airports there closed down first thing this morning. All the other major airports further south have cancelled a lot of early morning flights. But from noon, that's in about an hour's time, UK airspace will be closed altogether to civilian aircraft. So that's no commercial flights in or out of the country at all from noon until at least 6 p.m.
And Stephen, I'm new to this. Why does volcanic ash ground airplanes?
The tiny pieces of rock and sand and glass, apparently, in an ash cloud can wreak havoc in a jet engine. There was a KLM flight in the late 1980s, apparently, which flew into an ash cloud from Mount Redoubt in Alaska. All the plane's four engines failed. They got them started again and they landed safely, but the danger was very real.
So it's not a visibility problem.
It's that too.
Oh?
Yeah.
Okay. Any sign when this problem is going to clear?
The cloud is expected to pass out of UK airspace by early afternoon, then likely pass over parts of continental Europe and cause a lot of disruption there. The volcano in Iceland, meanwhile, is reported to be still erupting.
Okay, Marketplace's Stephen Beard, live from London. Thank you.
Okay, Bill.
China today said its gross domestic product grew almost 12% last quarter compared to a year ago with relatively low inflation. That would be the so-called Goldilocks scenario of growth. Not too hot, not too cold, just right. And stocks in Asia were higher today. They were down 0.25% in Europe, but in New York yesterday, the Dow jumped more than 100 points to 11,123. That's the highest finish since the infamous month of September 2008. There were relatively upbeat earnings from Intel and JP Morgan Chase and news that retail sales increased in March for the third month in a row. And here's a nice economic indicator. The amount of diesel fuel bought using credit cards at U.S. truck stops up in March to the highest level in more than a year, seeming to show the recovery spreading out from factories into the rest of the economy on four wheels.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing, online surveys, and event marketing. ConstantContact.com. By LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com. And by Citrix, offering GoToMyPC, allowing users to work from anywhere via the web. More at GoToMyPC.com/market.
The last sardine cans to say made in the USA are rolling off the assembly line this week. Reporter Jill Barchet tells us Bumblebee is shutting down the sole remaining sardine cannery in the U.S.
Two things helped kill the American sardine industry: canned tuna and overfishing. Tuna fish replaced sardines in the lunch bag, cutting demand at home. Overfishing has led to tighter fishing restrictions. Fishermen can't catch enough in U.S. waters to supply canned sardines on a large enough scale. Ronnie Peabody is the president of the Maine Coast Sardine History Museum. He says Bumblebee's already had to ship in fish from its cannery in Canada.
They can put out as many sardines as Bumblebee needs. They don't need this plant.
Maine claims it was once the sardine capital of the world. The industry employed entire communities along the Maine coast.
It is very sad to me, very sad, because there'll never be another Maine sardine ever.
128 people are expected to lose their jobs. I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
If an American friend tells you she just got back from touring some ruins, you'll probably assume she's traveled abroad. But this country has its decay as well, and American Studies professor Nick Yablon writes about them in a book called Untimely Ruins. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
What are this country's economic ruins?
Well, the ruins we've been hearing of in reports in the newspaper and on TV news are foreclosed homes that have been deteriorating and been vandalized, but also kind of vacant shopping centers and office buildings. But there have also been these kind of unfinished ruins, half-built houses in kind of subdivisions in various parts of the U.S., that have been left to rot in the sun even before they've completed the structure. I call these in my book ruins in reverse, because these ruins don't fall into ruin, but rather kind of rise into ruin.
Will the American ruins of this recession stand, or do you figure we will make it our job to fix them?
Well, that's an interesting question, because, you know, the unfinished ruins of 19th century panics were eventually completed. But with the case of the recent ruins, there is perhaps less optimism that it's perhaps best to kind of demolish some of these homes, some of these shopping centers and office buildings. Perhaps the scale of ruin is too immense to kind of recuperate. So perhaps we'll see more of them demolished than in the past.
Nick, the present is very exciting. Why do you linger so much over ruins?
They reveal certain aspects of American attitudes towards their own cities, towards technology, towards modernity. And they suggest perhaps a more complex kind of attitude than people, historians have suspected. I think people tend to emphasize that Americans are optimistic. They view their country as a land without ruins, that, you know, the best ruins are elsewhere. And that idea certainly goes back to the 19th century, the idea of America as a nation of futurity rather than antiquity. But there is alongside that a kind of lingering desire for ruins of some kind, for some kind of substitute antiquity.
The book is called Untimely Ruins, and the author is Nick Yablon. Nick, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Bill.
And finally, the Library of Congress is archiving the collected works of Twitter. History has been written by elites, but Twitter is everyday people reporting on everyday life. For example, I'm on Twitter now. Someone writes, 20 years later, I still wish Tom would catch Jerry already. Really makes you think. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.